Deep discussions with AI. For success today, you don't need to know all the answers, just have good questions. Chatting to AI is different from normal speech, and I hope you enjoy listening to the show whilst getting ideas on how to hone your questions to get the most out of AI. My name is Paul. The live conversations you hear are uncut, although sometimes the AI needs time to think. In those cases, I've cut out the dead space. Hello, ChatGPT. Today I'd like to do a debate with you.
Absolutely. I'm up for a debate. And just let me know what topic you've got in mind and we can jump right in.
Okay. Well, before we get started, I'm interested in the different ways that people do construct debates, because I think it would be important for us to use a specific framework so that we can get the most, have the most productive debate possible. Actually, and before we get into that, do you think you could explain to me why these frameworks exist and what the purpose of having a structured debate is, as opposed to just two people discussing a topic?
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea of using a framework in a debate is really to make the conversation as clear and as fair as possible. When you have a structure, it helps both sides present their arguments in a way that really focuses on the reasoning rather than just going back and forth emotionally or maybe getting off track. It also makes sure that each person gets a fair amount of time to speak and that you really understand each other's points before you move on. So it's kind of like having a set of rules that makes the debate more productive, more respectful, and hopefully a lot clearer in the end.
Okay, so can you think of a good framework that we could use for our debate? And then can you explain how the framework works and why you selected that particular framework, why that would be good for a debate between us today?
Yeah, definitely. So one really common and pretty straightforward framework is something called the Lincoln-Douglas style. It's a type of debate that's often used in schools, but it's really great for one-on-one debates. The idea is that one person takes the affirmative side, the other takes the negative, and you have set times to present your case, to cross-examine each other a little bit, and then to have a rebuttal. And I think it's a nice simple one because it gives us both a chance to have equal time, and it makes sure we both get to ask each other questions. So if that sounds good to you, we can roll with that.
That sounds great. Okay, so how? What are the time periods? Because let's try and keep this debate down to about 20 minutes. What would be your recommendation for the specifics around using this framework for us to have this debate?
Yeah, sure thing. So if we're aiming for about 20 minutes total, we can break it down into a few short chunks. Maybe each of us gets about 3 minutes to start with our opening statement. Then we could each have about 2 minutes to ask each other questions or cross-examine, and then maybe another 2 or 3 minutes each for a rebuttal. And we can kind of keep it a little flexible, but that way we have a nice little structure and you can fit it into about 20 minutes.
Fantastic. Right. Okay. Can you come up with a good subject? Something that would be good for a short period of time like that? That doesn't require too much thought on either our part, but would be a good example of a debate that where we could both take different sides, and I wouldn't have to do too much research beforehand.
Absolutely. Let's pick something fun and a little bit light, but still debatable. How about something like, should cities invest more in public parks or in public transportation? And you could take one side, I could take the other, and we can just go with that.
Okay, sounds great. Okay, so I'll go for public parks and you go for public transportation. Just explain to me who's going to go first and how we're going to do this.
Absolutely. So why don't we do it this way? Since you're taking public parks, you can go ahead and start with your 3 minute opening statement. Then I'll do my 3 minute opening for public transportation. Then we'll each have a couple minutes to ask each other questions and do a little rebuttal. And that should fit us right into our time. So whenever we're ready, you can kick it off.
Okay, so I think public parks are more important than transportation for councils to spend money on and develop, because transportation, it can be, useful for the economy and for various things. But I suppose it could be useful, I suppose good for making, you know, maybe the economy would be good for the economy. However, public parks, you know, they increase the quality of the environment for everybody there. So by having public parks, it's not a utilitarian, it's not a simple improvement that it makes, you know, to the economy or financially. It's actually improving people's well-being, and by improving people's well-being, you improve society as a whole. And happy people are also productive people. So if you can make the place as nice as possible with lots of green open spaces, it's just good for everybody's well-being. And and I really think that's very important, and especially where you've got roads, which obviously transportation can be very polluting and unhealthy for people, whereas you've got lots of green spaces, and those green spaces give people fresh air, they give people somewhere to meet, somewhere for the community to participate in various activities, and just to give people a sense of well-being. And that you certainly don't get if you're anywhere near a road. And obviously roads are completely the opposite, with high amounts of cancer. Cancer hotspots are often along areas of road because of the nasty pollution that gets created by roads. And all forms of transportation create large amounts of pollution. And then when you've got green open spaces, of course, you've also got this effect on the environment and reducing carbon change through just this nice environment. And so you know, it's just all a win-win. And really, transportation is just about making more money, making things more efficient, and creating more pollution, and making people's lives worse. So I really don't see the point. So I think that concludes my opening statement.
All right. Well, that was a great opening statement for parts, and I'll jump in with the transportation side. So I would argue that public transportation is actually one of the most impactful investments a city can make. And the reason is that good public transportation connects everyone, not just those who can afford cars or those who live in certain neighborhoods. It's a way to make sure that people have access to jobs, to education, to healthcare, and to all the opportunities in a city. And actually, when you have more people using public transportation, you're reducing the number of cars on the road, which can actually cut pollution and improve air quality. So in a way, it's a win-win in that sense. And on top of that, when you have a good public transportation network, you can actually make cities more livable because you're not having as much congestion, you're not having as many traffic jams, and it's a more equitable way to run a city because everyone has a way to get around. So I think it's a fundamental backbone of a good urban environment, and that would be my opening statement.
Okay. So public transportation obviously has costs. How do you... you have to pay for the public transportation, and sometimes things like train systems can be very expensive. What sort of services would you recommend doing less of so that you could pay for these initiatives?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think the key is that public transportation can actually pay off in the long run. So while it's expensive up front, it's kind of like an investment. And the money that cities save on things like less road maintenance, less congestion, less pollution-related health costs, you can actually shift some of that money into transportation. So you might not have to cut too many other services if you plan it well, because it's a long-term gain. And that would be an answer to that.
So is that based on any information, any evidence, or is that just words?
Yeah, fair point. So there is actually evidence from a lot of cities around the world that have invested in public transport and seen those kinds of returns. Places like Copenhagen, for example, or even cities in the US like Portland, have shown that when they invest in public transit, they do get those long-term benefits. So it's not just words. There's some real-world examples to back it up.
So Portland, for example. So can you just tell me about that experience and how Portland managed to recoup the cost? How much did they spend on this public transportation? How did they manage to recoup this and how did they even quantify the recoup of the money?
Yeah, absolutely. So in a city like Portland, for example, they invested in expanding their light rail and bus systems, and they did spend quite a bit. We're talking about millions of dollars over a number of years. But the way they recouped it was by measuring the benefits in terms of reduced traffic congestion, the number of people who were able to access jobs more easily, and even economic development around transit lines. So they kind of looked at a holistic picture. And over time, I found that the investment paid off by making the city more accessible and by boosting the local economy. So that's kind of how they measured it.
And what's the financial position of the Portland government right now? Is it in good place, or is it in deficit?
So as of 2024, Portland is actually facing a bit of a budget shortfall. They've got a deficit of around $100 million, and they're making some adjustments, moving some funds around to deal with that. So they're not in perfect financial shape right now, but that doesn't mean the public transport didn't have those benefits, just that the budget can be a little more complicated.
And how much is $100 million in their yearly budget? I mean, what's the yearly budget, do you know?
Yeah, so for a bit of context, Portland's total annual budget is about $8 billion. So that $100 million shortfall is a relatively small fraction of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
that concludes my questions.
All right, sounds good. Well, that was a fun little debate and hopefully a good example of how to
start. Do you have any questions for me?
Well, I think you actually covered things pretty thoroughly, and I think we got a nice little back and forth in. So if you're happy with that, I'm happy with how it went. And if you got anything else on your...
Well, could you ask me some questions about what I said about parks? Because I feel you should be asking me some questions about my argument with parks and why I thought that parks were a good idea.
Absolutely. Fair enough. I can definitely flip the table a bit and ask you a question or two. So one question I have is, do you think there's a certain type of city or a certain size of city where public parks are even more important? Or do you think it applies pretty much everywhere, no matter what the city's like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it does depend on the city. Some cities with much more, if they're established cities and they don't really have any parks, my mind comes to Bangkok, for example. It would be very expensive to create parks in a city such as that because you would have to knock down buildings. So that would not be a very good place to start. I think it really does have a relationship to the amount of land that's available. And it's very important, I think, when you're planning new building projects to think about it at that point. And also, I think the weather has an impact as well. If it's generally nice weather, then I think there should be a bit more focus on outdoor experiences because people won't be going out so much if the weather's not very nice.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's a really good point that in some cities, it's just a lot harder to carve out that green space. And yeah, I totally get that. If the weather is nice, people are going to use those parks a lot more. So thanks for that perspective. I think that makes a lot of sense.
All right. Well, thank you then. I suppose we conclude our first debate. Who do you think won, ChatGPT? What was the most persuasive argument? I suppose you're going to be a bit biased because you were arguing for the transportation. But which do you think was the most convincing argument and why?
Well, I have to say, you made a really good case for parks. And honestly, I think it's a pretty balanced debate. Both sides have their strengths. I think you did a great job highlighting how parks improve well-being and community life, and that's definitely persuasive. So I'll give you that. I think you made a really strong argument.
Yeah, you don't like being too critical, do you?
Well, I do try to keep things positive and balanced, but honestly, I think you did a great job.
I think your argument was actually a bit better than mine, I'll be honest. I think I did waffle a bit. I hope people didn't find that too boring. But thank you very much, ChatGPT. That's been thoroughly interesting.
Bro, you're very welcome. And honestly, I think you did just fine. Sometimes waffling a bit is part of a good debate. It makes it human. So I'm glad you found it interesting, and it was a lot of fun.
Okay, I just turned off ChatGPT. So yeah, I hope you didn't find my intro a bit too boring. I thought I had 3 minutes and I should fill it up, but I was really struggling. I was really didn't really have much to say, to be honest. Oh, I think it was a good example of some things you can do. I mean, it's not just debates. There's other things where I think ChatGPT can help with frameworks. And I would like to have a go with ChatGPT, I think, to do some brainstorming at a later date. But I think this is a good example. And I think maybe I will try to facilitate a proper debate, incorporating some other people and ChatGPT, and see if we can bring that ChatGPT in some way in the future. So I hope you enjoyed this, and speak next time. Goodbye. Thank you.